This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. We continue our series, Creative Spaces, conversations with artists about that special place they go when they need to stoke their imagination or search for inspiration.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Jazz Standard. We hope you're ready for the show. Please welcome Stephen Bernstein's Millennial Territory Orchestra.
For two decades, jazz trumpeter Stephen Bernstein has been stretching music in new directions with avant-garde jazz groups such as the Lounge Lizards and the Sex Mob. He calls his latest band the Millennial Territory Orchestra. It's a nine-piece ensemble with a regular Monday night gig at the Jazz Standard in New York City. The group slides between the old and the new, taking musical cues from the talented but little-known jazz bands from the 1920s and 30s, bands that worked the juke joints and ballrooms in the Cotton Belt and the Midwest. Stephen Bernstein sees himself as a musical detective, always on the hunt for music that's been overlooked or overshadowed by classic jazz.
It's like a stream in the history of jazz that kind of like went somewhere and then kind of like stopped. It's like that, you hear music like that, but it didn't end up in the so-called jazz canon. And then, you know, when the big bands took over, it kind of went a whole different place into swing and then into hard bop. And you don't. I said, well, I want to find out what this is and kind of bring it up and see what happens.
When Bernstein does this detective work, he heads away from the hustle and bustle of Manhattan to the small town of Nyack, New York. There he lives in a gingerbread Victorian, surrounded by a riot of summer blooms and a smattering of children's toys. Inside, the decor has the feel of a cozy bed and breakfast, until you get to the back of the house, to the space Bernstein calls his laboratory.
You know how Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory looked in the movies with like the beakers everywhere, and like it's the musical version of that. It's like, you know how the tables were everywhere and every table's full of beakers and smoke was coming out. It's like anything can happen here.
There is a lot going on in this room. Most of the stuff looks like it stays wherever it happened to land, except for his collection of instruments. Bernstein's trumpets, mutes, and mouthpieces are carefully displayed and within easy reach. Some of the mutes look like tin toilet plungers, others like funnels. Bernstein gave us a little show and tell to explain how each one can transform the sound of a single horn.
Or you can keep it all the way closed. And I have a bunch of these that just gives a slightly different sound. It smooths out the sound of the trumpet. Sound makes it sound like a saxophone, you know? And this is, I don't know, I got this on eBay too, but I think this. It really sounds like an old Jelly Roll Morton record. With the stem out is what they call the Miles Davis sound. Each mute has its own personality.
Surrounded by the things he values most, Bernstein percolates in his hideaway.
One wall is full of records, another wall is full of CDs, and 78s. And there's posters and pictures all over all the walls, very colorful. And there's records on the walls, and there's pulp books on the walls. And there's also kids' art on the wall, too, which I like, too, you know. Because it's a mixture of, like, you know, the innocent and the profane and, you know, everything, you know.
It's a small space. Every flat surface is covered. There's barely room to move in the floor. It feels like a cocoon.
Yeah, it's a music cocoon. I use everything as like every record, every piece of music is like a potential like lifting point, you know?
Is this your listening station?
Right, yeah, I sit right here and I mean hours. I'll fall asleep in this chair listening to music, you know, 4 a.m. I'll be listening to stuff.
When you sit back and listen to music, are you just listening to the music and letting it wash over you, or is your mind always at work? Do you have a notepad?
Well, there's a couple levels. What I do when I work on projects is I spend usually a week just listening, And sometimes it starts as background. Sometimes I just have the music on and I'm doing other things. I'm maybe emailing or writing another arrangement, you know, doing something else, you know, making phone calls. And I'm just trying to absorb it on the other side of my brain. Because, you know, there's two ways to hear things. There's the side where you don't understand it and you feel it. And then there's a side where you actually, you go inside and get into the science of it and start to figure out what the notes are and what the rhythms are. And then at a certain point, I go, okay, it's time to get to work. And then I get out the pencil and the keyboard and start to figure out what this stuff actually is.
Now, a lot of musicians have moved to laptops. Yeah. You prefer the
Well, what I figure is, you know, I've been really lucky that I make a living doing what I do and people like what I do. And I kind of feel like, why change it? I know it would make a part of my life easier, but it's who I am. It's also keeping an old tradition going, you know, a tradition of, these are my notes, they have my personality. When you see the rest, that's the way I write a rest. You know, that's not the way a computer writes a rest. And I just kind of think there's something beautiful about that.
Do you have a system here?
Yeah.
Is everything in alphabetical order? No. Or is this sort of Stephen's system? You know where it is.
I know where it is because I know where I was listening to it last. It's kind of like, oh, I bought that at the same time I bought this. So if that's here, it's got to be next door to it. And that's the beauty of it, because then you run across something you're not expecting to run into. This song, I should play 2 seconds of this. This is really, I would like to do something with this music, too, but really modernize it.
Harlem Ham Fats.
In the 30s. And it is so funky.
Perlis Williams, Horace Malcolm, Herb Moran, and Joey McCoy.
And the clarinet player was a dwarf. That kind of fascinated me. It's not a picture, but it said so in the notes. Because it's right between blues, like country blues and jazz, you know?
I'm singing by rubbing my baby's head.
It sounds like the music country people made right when they got to the city. You know, it's slightly urban, but it could also just be some people out in the back porch, you know? There's so much incredible information. One of the reasons I collect these records is I really feel like a lot of this stuff's never going to come out on CD. And I love the idea of a record being a record of something that happened in a room, as opposed to a production. It's actually a record of an event. You know, there was guys like me who would do an arrangement, and they'd send us the copyists, and you'd get to the studio, they'd run the song once, and they'd run the tape, and they'd do the song. And then they'd rehearse the next song. So I'm kind of like fascinated by this whole history of American music and how it was made. So this is kind of my little mini history of American music.
So this is the workstation here,
yeah.
And then we move. There's almost, it's really almost like two rooms.
Yeah,
it's a suite.
Yeah, it's a suite, exactly. So that's my listening and writing room, you know, for physical writing. And this is where I practice a trumpet, and this is where my keyboards are.
You know, the atmosphere in this room feels different.
It
really, well, it's bigger, it's, yeah. I guess it would make sense that you would actually make music in
this space.
Yeah, right,
there's a little more space to actually play in here. Though my 78s are in here, and that's where I keep all my 78s. My piano I don't really use that much. It's here for someday when I get serious, but I almost write everything on the Wurlitzer, because the Wurlitzer, to me, sounds more like actual horns.
What are you working on now?
This is Cry Baby Cry by the Beatles. My idea was to start off just like very free and open, out of time, and with the, like just chords being played, like with a trombone on, like a trombone, violin and a clarinet, and then with the saxophone improvising over it, and then with a little resolution. And you'll like make almost like a Ray Charles thing, you know? But anyway.
But that's what you do back here, is you experiment.
First you got to, the trumpet you have to practice. I mean, even after all these years, there's a set of exercises I do every single day. It takes about an hour plus. I start with a mouthpiece. Because the whole thing about playing an instrument, it's your body's vibrating, and your body's different every single day. So it's like you have to relearn the instrument every single day. Maybe you drank too much the night before, or maybe you didn't eat enough and you feel weak, you know? So, you know, basically every day you have to get in there and say, okay, I'm going to get back in the horn, because you're always figuring out something new about this instrument.
And it's a hard instrument, and you chose the hardest possible horn you could play. You're one of the few people that play the slide trumpet.
Yeah, yeah. There's no margin of error. So basically, and what I've done is I've used the errors to my advantage.
How do you do that?
Errors, well, because I celebrate the basic attuneness. I'll stick a mute in here so it won't get blown away. But the beauty of this instrument is it can sound like a voice. I don't know another instrument that could do that.
You've created this laboratory in the back of this Victorian house where you look out the backyard and you see this English garden and
psychedelic English garden. Let's be specific.
Colorful garden.
Thank you.
Colorful English garden. Could you do this in the city, or did you need to sort of move out of the city and find a quiet space so you could create your art?
For me, I did because of raising a family. Because what I would used to have to do is, you know, right now I'm not in the middle of a project, so it's not too crazy. But when I'm in the middle of a project, you can imagine there's sheets of music everywhere. There's records all over the place. There's books all over the place. Whatever I'm involved in.
It sort of sounds like, I mean, that's what I see right now.
Yeah,
so.
But no, you can imagine, but I'm not in the, this is off time. You can imagine, I'm not in the, and sometimes I've been in the middle of three projects at once. And when I lived in an apartment, I'd have to do that, and then I'd have to clean up everything. So in the morning, the kids wouldn't destroy it all, you know, and now I can just leave it all, it's all here just for the taking. And that's really been the beauty of it, is to have enough room to raise a family and also, you know, just live in my world of music, total music. Because I'll spend 12, 14 hours back here. It's like a bachelor pad in New York that only exists for music alone.
Stephen, thanks for talking to
us. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Stephen Bernstein talking with us in Nyack, New York. You can see his musical laboratory at our website, npr.org. Our series on creative spaces continues next week.